Like, what did you expect? You go poking at an unknown entity, and this is what you get. Who knows how much worse this can escalate to?
This is where the money printer shines, because when these guys get in trouble, we're going to see bailouts, the likes of which we've never seen before, I think.
This could potentially bring down the U.S. economy. So it's important to get this right. And you can see clearly that we haven't really gotten it right at any point of this, in my opinion.
At the end of the day, whether you believe it or not, it doesn't really matter, because every individual can protect themselves by just going after the asset directly and holding it themselves and using it as money. And for anyone saying that Bitcoin isn't used as money, this is what I have for you.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Greer and Tony are here with me. Guys, up first, we've got some crazy news. So, breaking, Iran declares that NVIDIA, Microsoft, Google, IBM, Oracle, and Palantir offices and data centers are legitimate military targets. And their reasoning, of course, is that their technology is being used for military applications. This is wild. I mean, I can't even imagine the far-reaching impact of this. Tony, I'm going to let you take this one first. I would love to hear your thoughts on the likelihood of this unfolding and them being wrapped up into this war in a way that they maybe hadn't expected, and what you think the implications are.
Well, for starters, I am 100% sure this wasn't on anyone's bingo card, right? But as much as I hate war and destruction and everything that comes with it, those that are somewhat, you know, anti-surveillance state, I don't think they're all too upset with this headline, right? As long as it's only hard drives that are being blown up here. But at the same time, man, like, what did you expect? You go poking at, you know, an unknown entity, and this is what you get. I mean, who knows how much, you know, how much worse this can escalate to. You can't bully someone forever. I've been saying this, you know, for the longest time. At some point, you're going to get someone that you didn't see coming push back in a way that you can't control. And I think we're starting to see the ramifications of this in this very, very retarded war that, you know, should have been avoided in the first place. So yeah. Brace yourself. I mean, one, I guess, protect your money, but two, protect yourself. I mean, if you can, get out of any jurisdiction that is a potential, at least short to midterm target, you know, with all of this back and forth.
Yeah. So I need to be careful how I say this. I think anyone who's watched the show long enough to understand sort of where I stand on these things would come around to understand what I'm trying to get at. So there will be collateral damage in war, and I think it's tragic. I think that when you see some of the I think, what was it? Very early on, we saw a school in Iran that was bombed effectively by accident. From what I've seen, the investigation seems to suggest that it was a U.S. strike or an Israeli strike, and it was just a mistake. These are the sorts of things that are going to happen. When you choose war, you're going to choose messy, and the messy goes both ways. And sometimes it's going to be messy, and you're going to shrug your shoulders as a politician because you don't care about human life anyway. And it's the other guys, you know, civilians, and sometimes it's going to be your civilians. I hope to God nobody is killed in this and they have a chance to evacuate, that there's some sort of a warning provided. But this is the kind of thing that I would anticipate in a messy war, all war is messy. That was redundant. But Greer, what do you think when you see headlines like this?
Yeah, so you're telling me that Iran might target the upcoming surveillance state and take out some of the world's largest AI companies and perhaps even cause their stocks to drop. So maybe AI won't take everyone's jobs. I agree with you guys. I don't want this. I don't want war, especially this war. And I don't want the loss of human life on either side. But this one, in my opinion, is a little bit interesting. Imagine what would happen to the economy if the largest stocks suddenly lose major infrastructure. You know, maybe we won't be replaced by ClaudeBot later this year, but we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, the Mag 7, that would be, they have been propping up the stock market for a long time. I can't even imagine the fallout from this. And we'll get to some of what's coming in the economy here. I'd love to hear anyone else's opinion in the comments on this one, because I know it's a touchy subject to jump in on. Sort of related, Iran hit Dubai's financial center with a kamikaze drone, is what Mario Nafal is calling it. Dubai's financial district getting hit means every global market opens tomorrow, and with a new variable nobody priced in. And that was, I think, yesterday he shared this. Man, Tony, I'll let you take this one first again. I mean, this is sort of close to home for a lot of people who we know. And it's also, I mean, Dubai is a massive financial hub as well. The implications of this, I think it's hard to price in, right? Like, what are the impacts going to be? What do people anticipate will be the fallout from something like this? What do you think?
Well, in my opinion, Iran's reaction, like what it's doing now, is something that they've been very transparent about. I don't think they have anything against the countries, like the Middle Eastern countries that they're bombing, but they've made it very clear that any one of them supporting any US or any of their proxies in their countries are going to be attacked, because, you know, that poses a direct threat to them. And, you know, when you're in war, I mean, you can expect, you know, one side to do whatever it can to protect itself. And I think this is what we're seeing. So their message to Dubai and all these other countries have been very clear. You expel your American military bases and everything else that's a threat to us from your territory, and this ends instantly. And as long as that's not the case, you're going to continue seeing headlines like this. And unfortunately, if this drags on long enough, you know, you can very well see, you know, these five-star countries turn into, you know, your next Iran's, your next Lebanon's, your next whatever other country was suffered through many years of casualties and destruction. It's very upsetting to see, but, you know, this goes to show that the world is run by psychopaths, right? And I mean, it's time to end always having to be at the receiving end of these crazy people's decisions. And so there is an option now available to the world to contribute to ending that. And that's to, you know, render the money that they use to fund all of this obsolete. But you need people to pay attention to this. Like, you need a lot of people to pay attention to this and to actually move in that direction for things to start to happen. Otherwise, you were going to see this. And I don't know, man, maybe at some point, if depending on how bad this gets, maybe there's nothing left to see. Which is, you know, another conversation in and of itself.
All righty, Greer, what do you think?
The hardest thing about what we're going through right now is that we're not getting any information. You know, what we see are either a mix of deep fakes or sometimes they're videos from previous wars. So, yeah, this looks like a strike on the financial center, but it's hard to know how bad it was. And that's not just true for Iran, but it's true for all of the other countries, too. Like, we are not getting the news in the way that we need to see it. I think that's one of the biggest problems, is not just the fog of war and being uncertain from a leadership perspective, but from citizens. And in America, you know, Congress is looking at passing a draft, sending over our sons and daughters to join the fight. But the parents at home aren't seeing what's happening. And that has to change. I think that's one of the biggest problems right now.
Yeah, completely agree. I've seen a lot of things that, and some will say, Grok, is this true? And it's like, no, this is a clip from 2023, right? Like, it's so hard to verify so much of this stuff. You have to go do your own research way more than you might have had to even a couple of years ago. Alrighty, guys, we've got, so Luke Martin shared a clip of Luke Groman talking about the geopolitical chess match, which I don't think this is chess. I think this is just, I mean, checkers at best. Luke Groman's comment was, you can take Iran's oil offline and Russia has all the power. You can take Russia offline and control Iran. But if you pick a fight with either, you blow up the oil market. And we have seen a lot of tumult in the oil market. Greer, first of all, do you think this is a geopolitical chess match, or do you think this is just a bunch of power-hungry people? And second, what do you think is going to happen to gasoline prices?
Honestly, I think it's a shit show. It's very clear that we are totally unprepared. You know, the U.S. had said we had months of planning, but Iran has been planning on this type of situation for, you know, 40-something years. You know, so what happens with the oil market is going to be vital to the American economy. You know, we depend on oil so much. Even if we don't get oil from Iran, the rest of the world does. China does. Russia does. India does. And the petrodollar, I think, is at the biggest risk here. Will the dollar be the reserve currency? If oil continues to increase in price, we're going to see a drop in equities and stocks. And I think that has a very negative effect for not just people who are retiring, but for companies to access to capital. This could potentially bring down the U.S. economy. So it's important to get this right. And you can see clearly that we haven't really gotten it right at any point of this, in my opinion, and from what I can see.
Yeah, I agree with that. Tony?
I'm not bullish on this at all, man. I mean, no matter which way you you look at this, it's bad news for all of us. And if the oil prices get too high, well, I mean, I guess the silver lining is people will start to walk and ride bicycles again, because, you know, driving a car is just not doable. But the end of the petrodollar, I think this is it. I don't see how that can be saved. I mean, when you get to a point in the world where you've got all these calamities happening, you know, simultaneously, like how do you expect to have any form of order and logic and, you know, like an organized plan to this? They called this attack Epic Fury, thinking it's some sort of like a video game thing. They're in and out, and, you know, the glory days are upon us. This is not what this is, man. You poked a very dangerous bear that has been preparing for this poke for over 30 years, and now you have no idea what to do or what to expect. But in the meantime, you've got millions of folks that are either being killed or are going to get, you know, killed economically because of these stupid decisions. So again, you know, if people are complaining about high prices and difficult life situations, this is definitely not going to make it easier.
Yeah, that's well said. And if we were to sort of make light of an obviously serious situation, this was a funny tweet from Gwart. Why don't they just tokenize the oil in the Middle East and transport it across permissionless financial rails, thereby avoiding the Strait of Hormuz altogether? Greer, I think we all recognize this, I think, is a joke. A lot of crypto bros probably see it and think that this is a real option, because this is sort of what they've been arguing for.
Yeah, let's hope not. I think this is a funny way to highlight all the enthusiasm behind crypto and blockchains and tokenization. Ultimately, those things coming about means that you don't own the real thing. You know, in my opinion, there's only one thing you can really own in this world. And while this is sort of a humorous, you know, dig at some of the latest technology, you know, there is a push to make stocks tokenized, to make all assets tokenized. This earns a ton of fees on behalf of the asset managers. So, you know, we're kind of looking at two scenarios here. You can have things that are permissioned that someone else owns and controls your access, or you can have Bitcoin, which you control, which you own, that no one can steal from you. So even though we find this to be funny, it's really a great highlight on the way the world is moving, and you have to be ready for it, and you have to prepare and see what the options are. And at this point, there are two.
And those two are?
Tokenized anything or Bitcoin. That's it. Those are your two choices.
I agree. Well, I'll tell you what, though. If there's an oil NFT project, I think I might get in and see if I can make some money that way.
Tony, what do you think?
Oil NFT, man. You're on your own with that one.
Dude, I think it should be a project from the Bitcoin way. We offer people on-chain rights to oil. Tony, what's your take on the... Well, I don't need it.
The thing is, man, I'm pretty sure, at least I sure hope this guy was kidding. But the scary reality is that I'm sure there's, you know, tons of folks out there that actually thinks this is a serious statement and like actually contemplate, you know, this being a thing.
Yes, I think that's the concern, is that so I wasn't sure if they were kidding, because I don't know anything about this account, but obviously it is a joke of a concept. The question then becomes, who are the people who are buying it? And the answer is the NFT bros, I think. So
Okay, guys, this is very, very scary. Hopefully no one ever uses or buys this product. NVIDIA and Palantir have partnered to create a new AI operating system. And of course, the operating system is the AI. Tony, I know you have been in the open source software space, cybersecurity space for a long time. Have you ever seen a more frightening proposal for a bit of software?
Well, the thing is, our first story kind of fixes it, right? Like Iran fixes this. Because maybe they read this headline and they're like, we're not having it, right? And so maybe they might do the world a favor by, you know, preventing it from becoming a thing. But yeah, this is absolutely a disaster in the making, at least for those who think it's a good idea in the first place. So much power should never be, you know, centralized in the hands of lunatics. And thankfully, you know, this code AI in general is a free learning algorithm. It's open source. And it's going to be available to anyone who is willing to spend the time to learn it and develop, you know, new solutions to the world with it. So while these crazy people might, you know, have control over their own projects, rest assured that, you know, this tech is not isolated to them and them alone. You know, at some point, depending how crazy they get, you're going to see a lot of, you know, very strong pushback from, you know, there's 8.3 billion people out there, man. Not everybody is clueless and just sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this is going to be proprietary. There's not going to be one bit of anything open source in this solution.
Avoid at all costs, man. Like, yes. Anyone with half a brain should stay like within 100 kilometers away from this garbage.
You know what, Tony, you're right, but they're going to sell it on the marketing platform of convenience, and it's going to do really cool things. And most people are going to, I think a lot of people are going to fall for it.
I would wonder, is this really for the end user? This technology will probably be used by the security apparatus, the enforcement state. And we probably wouldn't even have a chance to use it. I think it would just be used against us. And to me, that's the double-edged sword when it comes to AI. Yes, it can help you write blog posts and create images and funny videos. But at the same time, it has this really unmatched power to track all of your location, all your history, identify who you are, what you're doing, and feed that information to people who could use it against you for whatever reason, at least at the minimum, just to limit your freedom, even in a chilling effect. So I think this is something that we won't get to play with. You know, we get to play with the toys, the things that amuse us, while the people in power who have, you know, the excess of dollars, they get to create the digital cage that we are all put in.
I think that's a good point. Alrighty, guys. Jeff Snyder said that he said, holy shit, now it's Morgan Stanley. So Morgan Stanley's $8 billion New Haven fund got hit with massive redemption requests. They denied most of them. So first it was BlackRock and Blue Owl, Blackstone before them. I mean, this is getting messy. Tony, you seem unsurprised and unfazed by this. Could you explain?
Left, right, left, they all fall down like toy soldiers, right? I'm surprised he's surprised. I mean, how many signs do you want over the last few years that indicate that this is exactly where we're headed? It starts at the bottom of the ladder, but guess what, guys? Eventually, it finds its way to the top, right? When the whole thing is a lie and a Ponzi to begin with, it's only a matter of time before it all comes crumbling down. So if the big boys are starting to struggle now, we saw this with BlackRock a few days ago, and now you hear about Morgan Stanley. This is it, man. I mean, I don't know how clear of a sign you want to understand that the legacy system is done. And it's just going to take like the dumbest little trigger now in order to completely blow it up. And when that happens, this is where you're gonna start seeing that shit show, ugly video game that I keep referring to, because you're either gonna have your bank accounts frozen, you're either going to see capital controls, very strict capital controls, and you're not gonna be able to access any of your purchasing power, at least not without, you know, having to abide by like the most absurd of extreme rules. And so those are going to be stuck in this. Well, they don't have many options other than to cause revolutions, right? Like when somebody's hungry and you've closed all doors, what do you expect them to do? Especially in a place with 500 million guns.
Yeah.
So it's either this or those who are paying attention, saving in money that is not susceptible to this collapse, Bitcoin in self-custody. Well, the good news is now these folks are going to start to take it seriously. They're going to understand that this is not an investment. This is like they're going to stop believing the lie and the rubbish that the legacy system is trying to sell them on Bitcoin, and are finally going to understand what the conspiracy theorists have been saying for, what, the last 17 years? That this is the exit. This is the ticket to freedom. But unfortunately, you know, only those who learn through common sense save themselves before they go through hell.
Yeah, this is where the money printer shines, because when these guys get in trouble, we're going to see bailouts the likes of which we've never seen before, I think. And that is why you need hard assets that you control, can't be converted into paper IOUs. I couldn't agree with you anymore, Tony. Greer.
Yeah, I wonder if the private credit market would get a bailout like what we saw with TARP back in 2008. And I kind of think maybe they wouldn't. But what's interesting here is you can be a blue-collar Canadian trucker and have your bank account frozen, or you can be a high-net-worth individual who's invested in BlackRock or any of these private credit funds, and you can both be frozen from your account or not able to withdraw your money. And to me, that is really fascinating, because it doesn't matter where you line up on the financial spectrum. There is a system of control all along that spectrum. And I think this is kind of what makes people who are ultra wealthy learn about Bitcoin for the first time. And you know me, I am a hyper bull when it comes to Bitcoin's price and adoption. I think that we're going to see some people wise up to this, and they're going to look for a solution to where they can put their money where it can't be controlled by someone else. Imagine depositing millions of dollars into one of these private credit funds and only being told you can withdraw 5%. And we've seen lots of people try to withdraw and they've been capped. So to me, this is, you know, the next step is the bank run on all of these investments, if that can even happen. And when people start rushing for the exits, we've seen what happened with Silicon Valley Bank and some others. It can be instantaneous. So I think the world is going to wake up to Bitcoin very fast. And I think this particular crisis could cause the crash that everyone has been anticipating for years that hasn't quite materialized.
I hear you. I think if I were a betting man, I would head on over to Polymarket and I would bet on bailouts. That's got to be my base case. But anyway, guys, this is an interesting one. So Rationality, it's a pretty long tweet, but he basically says, this is the year everyone realizes the entire global economy is going to collapse. No, it's not doomer speak. It's a structural certainty if you understand how the system works. He talks about the oil shock, the energy crisis, AGI, the deflationary bomb that's going to kill jobs and aggregate demand. It's truly over. Unemployed people cannot repay mortgages. Governments cannot repay debt in real terms when tax receipts from employment and consumption are in the drain. He goes on and on. He said, I've maintained for several years now, there are only two ways out of this inevitable endgame. And Tony, this is what I want your thought on: social revolution or an economic revolution, austerity or currency debasement. I would love to hear, he said they're going to choose 2B, currency debasement, and it will spark number one, a social revolution. That's kind of where I've tended to fall, is that we're going to see, and that's why I would bet on a bailout of these private credit funds. Tony, I think we would probably agree.
Of course, man. We've been saying this for forever now. It's just like now the world is starting to believe it. And he's spot on. It's going to be two, which is going to spark one, because, I mean, there's no other play when you're in such dire situations, right? Like when all the doors are closed, what are you going to do? You're going to act based on instinct and then think and worry about your actions later, because, yes, you know, that's all that's available to you. And that's a very scary position to be in, man. So the fact that, you know, a lot more people are starting to post about this, to me, it's a bit scary. Because you're not going to need one money printer to prevent this. You're going to need like a million of them. And of course, you know, the more that go off, well, you know, the faster you accelerate to this type of conclusion. So it's a lose-lose scenario for everyone or anyone who's still stuck in that world. And unfortunately, most people are. And I don't know how this ends, man. Like, I mean, this is what, bothers me at night sometimes, because it brings back trauma of what I lived through, except now it's fuck, it's like on a global level. And so I can't, I just like my brain, like sometimes I choose not to go there just to avoid, even more, bad thoughts. But this is definitely bad news. And I urge anyone still sitting on the sidelines to protect themselves. Even if you don't fully understand why, you need to look at Bitcoin. I mean, I'd suggest you do it and then figure out why later. At least you would have been protected to some degree, right? So brace yourselves.
Yeah. Greer, one of the things I didn't get to in his tweet, because it was a pretty long one, he said, all those years spent arguing over pronouns, wokeism, et cetera, has been a total joke. Unserious people in unserious times, because in serious times, everyone suddenly realizes what's important: energy, sound money, relationships, things that matter. So maybe if you want to give us a more optimistic take on what you can do to protect yourself.
Here's the optimistic take. I think this ends in hyperinflation, where you have, $20 gallon of gas and $100 hamburgers at the fast food joint. There's no way to be optimistic here, because look at it. We have to roll over $9 trillion in debt. We just started a new war that could cost $850 billion a year. I mean, they've already spent billions of dollars just in like the last 10 days. We have $100 trillion at least in unfunded liabilities, where Social Security dries up in just the next 4 years. So how are they going to print that much without influencing the purchasing power of the dollar? Not rolling over $9 trillion in debt is bad enough, and look at all the money that is wasted on different entitlement programs, on the illegal immigrants. I mean, Americans are being scammed left, right, and center, and at the same time, they're dealing with high employment, AI replacing their work, or at least that's the blame. Companies laying off people through attrition or just cuts. So I don't think there's anything that's a silver lining here. I think it's all going to hell. And I think there's only one way to protect yourself from any of this. And we need that to become adopted as quickly as possible. If you can use your Bitcoin as money, which you can do today at some retailers, we need to see more of that happen. Because if you can transact in Bitcoin easily, then I think you have a way out of this. But it really requires more people to understand that there is an exit.
Jeez, Greer, I'm sorry I asked you.
Well, look, they're already starting to finance fast food, right?
That's true.
If when this, becomes a thing, where do you think the financing is going to deteriorate to? Then they're going to finance how many bites of a burger you can have, right? It's it could get as extreme as that, as ludicrous as it sounds, right? Because what else you're going to do if you can only afford 2 bites? Well, then that's what you're going to pay for, right? So I think Bitcoiners are going to become like the saviors of the future world, because they're going to be the only ones in a position to actually do something useful. And the sense of community, especially those circular economies, are going to become extremely important, and like life-saving to some degree. So it's too bad not more people, men, are in this.
Yeah, I agree. And Greer, I hadn't heard the $850 billion a year number. I was under the impression it was 2 weeks to flatten the enemy, and we'd be in and out. So I don't know. We'll see how long it lasts. All righty, up last, Marty Bent. So there's been a back and forth between Marty and some other folks and the Coinbase people. So just to be clear, this is not like the entirety of the conversation that's been had. He said, hearing that despite all the efforts in lobbying for Bitcoin de minimis tax exemption, it's none other than Coinbase trying to nuke it behind the scenes to push stablecoins only. Apparently, they're telling legislators no one's using Bitcoin as money. A de minimis exemption for Bitcoin is a handout that will be DOA. So I don't know what to make of it. I don't trust Brian Armstrong. I don't trust Coinbase. He operates a crypto casino. His money is not to be made in a Bitcoin de minimis exemption. Like, I don't think his life materially improves, but they're denying it. They're saying, nope, that's not what's happening behind closed doors. I would love to hear, Tony, what you think is the likely situation here.
I don't know what to believe, man, but I wouldn't be surprised if you have people pushing against this because they're only looking out for their own interests. Like, no matter how revolutionary a solution is, you always have scumbags that, you know, are only looking at their own pockets with no regards to how, you know, the long-term benefits to themselves included come about. And so whether it's true or not, I don't know, man, but nothing surprises me anymore from people living and benefiting and profiting from the, you know, the legacy system. This is like the scummiest of individuals support this this broken system because, you know, they're the ones at the winning end of it. So at the end of the day, whether you believe it or not, it doesn't really matter because every individual can protect themselves by just going after the asset directly and holding it themselves and using it as money. And for anyone saying that Bitcoin isn't used as money, this is what I have for you.
Well said. Greer, what do you think?
Yeah, it makes me wonder why, you know, we have the crypto president and he wants to make America the crypto capital of the world. And maybe that's what he really meant. Maybe we just assumed he meant Bitcoin, but maybe the priority is really just about crypto and stable coins and controlling the money through this digital rail, which I think is a shame. You know, I think a lot of people who were excited about a Trump presidency have been really discouraged at every turn. And perhaps this is just another turn and another situation where you were sold something and, you know, we got the rug pulled. So it doesn't surprise me. I think it's very likely that this is true. I saw that it looked like Marty and his team were not walking back their reporting and they stand by it, even though they were confronted by Coinbase directly. So, you know, goodness, where do we go from here? I don't know. I just think that over time, people will see the differences between the two things, between Bitcoin and crypto, where crypto is controlled and permissioned, and Bitcoin is freedom.
Yeah. And by the way, not financial advice, but there is already a de minimis exemption at any level of spending if you take Tony's approach and you just, you know. So keep that in mind, everyone. Guys, I think that's a good place to wrap up. Thank you for being here, everyone who joined. Really appreciate it. Stick around for another minute. You can learn a bit about the Bitcoin way, how we can help you on your self-sovereignty journey, not just Bitcoin self-custody, but protecting your privacy, advising against things like a Palantir operating system and a Plan B residency option, which we can offer you as well. Tony Greer, good chatting. We'll catch up again early next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers. Hey there. Thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and big brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.